Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
But it is my great pleasure to call here Professor George Panetsos, who is going to give us a talk with the title The Difficult Leap, Greek Architecture 1950 to 2007. Professor Panetsos, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Professor Tsouna. I would like to thank everybody for being here and for having invited me. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here with you and talk a little bit about Greek architecture, which I have almost devoted my life to. Greece is universally known as the cradle of several architectural cultures. Besides the classical and the Byzantine, that acquired unprecedented and persisting dissemination westwards and eastwards, respectively, one could mention a long succession of architectural traditions that either emerged or flourished on Greek soil. Among the former are the Minoan, the Cycladic, the Mycenaean, the Archaic, and the Hellenistic. Among the latter are the Roman and the early Christian, which already cover about three millennia and a half. Due to the Ottoman occupation from the 15th century till 1821, Greece knew architectural retreat and discontinuity. It missed the Renaissance and the subsequent evolution and did not profit from Ottoman architecture either, since this was only marginally spread in Greece, despite the fact that a great majority among Ottoman architects and craftsmen, including Sinan, the greatest amongst them, despite the fact that these were by majority ethnic Greeks. The appearance of a pluralistic and lively vernacular architecture during the 18th century somehow re-established continuity. It was soon superseded by neoclassicism, which was predictably adopted as the appropriate architectural style for the newly established independent Greek state in the 30s. Here are some slides of the vernacular architecture of the mainly of the 18th century, just to get an idea of the pluralism that this vernacular architecture involved. And then we reach the modern time, the time of independence. And out of this almost five millennia, we're going to talk for about 57 years in all, which is about 1.1%, rather little. At the time of the National Revolution, it was of great interest to international archaeologists and dilettanti and so on to rediscover the monuments of ancient Greece. So they were coming to Greece and they were surveying the monuments. And this was actually happening for the first time in the mid-18th century. It should be noted that the Renaissance architect did not know anything about Greek architecture. So Greek architecture started being known to the West after mid-18th century. And this was how the advent of neoclassicism occurred. In Greece, in Athens, architects of the stage of Carl Friedrich Schinkel, who made this proposal for a royal palace on the Acropolis, and made also he has also written a text saying which architecture is appropriate for Greece. And then Gärtner, who actually built the Royal Palace, not on the Acropolis. Leo von Klenze, who oscillated between fantasies of this kind and reality. Then the Dane Christian Hansen, who was the architect of the Othonian University. His brother Theophil Hansen, who later became the architect of Imperial Vienna. This is the building of the Academy of Athens, 1859. And this is the Zappian Exhibition Palace, designed by Theophil Hansen again, on the foundations laid after the designs of a French architect, with this magnificent circular courtyard inside. Then Stamatis Kleanthis, one of the two important Greek architects of the 19th century, a disciple of Schinkel, and the author of the City Plan of Athens. And then Lysandros Kaftantzoglou, the director of the School of the Arts in Athens, architect of the Arsakion School, Girls' School, the Technical University and the School of Fine Arts. Here is the plan. And then, at the end of the century, Ernst Ziller, a German, who came to Athens as an assistant to Theophil Hansen. This is the mansion of Heinrich Schliemann, the excavator of Troy and Mycenae and so on, who Ziller built also the Regent's Palace, now the presidential mansion, and who also introduced some ideas of development in Athens with this development in Piraeus, which was combined with a factory. Actually, the neoclassicism in Greece persisted quite longer than anywhere else. This was due to the fact that formal education, architectural education did not exist, and the only education in architecture that did exist was an education of craftsmen, actually. These craftsmen were quite well educated, and this is why how Greek cities acquired this homogeneous character that they had, and were full of nicely done neoclassical buildings, quite precise according to the grammar of the orders and so on. This is why a vernacular version of neoclassicism appeared in Greece, produced by master builders and craftsmen educated at the school that I refer to, the School of Arts, after the models of high architecture. At the beginning of the 20th century, after a brief eclecticist interlude pioneered by architects like Metaxas and Nikoloudis, here are two projects by Nikoloudis, the early 20th century has been marked by the rejection of classicism and historic styles that was mainly mirrored in the work of Aristoteles Zachos. Here is a project for the Archbishop's Palace in Sparta. Zachos, who was born in 1872 and died at 1939, reappraised the vernacular architecture just as intellectuals were doing a few years earlier. And this architecture, vernacular architecture, was appreciated as responding to, as embodying timeless principles such as human scale, integration to the landscape. These are works by Zachos, his own house and the interior. I'm showing you a few images of architects with the architects in them. And this is an opportunity to see the self-image of the architect, since these images have been selected to be preserved by themselves. So here is Zachos. Here is a building of his for the Bank of Loverdos in Varibopi. The interior, modeled after vernacular precedents. And finally, Zachos is an abstract modernist architect. So what are the attributes of vernacular architecture that were being appreciated? Human scale, integration to the landscape, response to climate and lifestyle, correspondence of structure and form, and sincerity. Vernacular architecture and this perception of it as something familiar played an important role in the evolution of world architecture through its influence on key figures such as Adolf Loos, who visited the island of Skyros in 1904 in search of marble. And there it has been documented that he visited houses like this one on top, and which were later translated into his round plan concept. And then Le Corbusier, who also visited the area in the beginning of the 20th century, and he proposed the so-called five points of modern architecture. One of these here is the concept of the roof garden, which I presume that may have been inspired by these ill-maintained roofs that were, you know, all these little plants may flower. The conditions for the acceptance of modernist architecture in Greece were the purity of form, as in the Greek vernacular, particularly the Aegean, the social agenda of modernism, the functional priorities, the hygienic approach, and the rejection of costly ornament. These were quite important at a time of emergency after the influx of 1.5 million refugees from Asia Minor in 1922. And this may explain the almost unconditioned acceptance of the modern movement in the 20s and 30s in Greece. A group of talented young architects soon emerged, so this story of talented young people comes again and again, Professor Polalis. So this group emerged, and it consisted of Panos Nicolis Tzelepis. This is a building by Laskaris and Kyriakos, actually one of a complex dedicated to the housing of refugees in Athens. This is another building very early, 1926, the School of Medicine in Athens. Here is a building by Tzelepis, the Vula Children's Resort, in the early 30s. Here is another architect, Georgios Kondoleon, who built the house and dance school of Pula Pratsika, also a proponent of this return to the roots movement. This apartment house, which is currently across the street from the American Embassy in Athens, and what is probably his masterpiece, the Ford Motor Company headquarters and repair shop in Athens, which is actually a hybrid between a representative front part and a very functional and plain backside. Here is another architect, Nikolaos Mitsakis, and the Girls' High School in Thessaloniki. Kyriakos Panagiotakos, the school in Gouva. The Sotiria Sanatorium by Despotopoulos. A school by Patroclos Karantinos, very close to the New Acropolis Museum. Another school by Spiros Legeris in Rapetsona. Probably the best apartment building in Athens by Michailidis and Valentis. Michailidis had worked as an assistant to Le Corbusier in Paris, of Cypriot origin. Actually, this ambitious group, little group of people, even managed to host, maybe by chance, but they did manage, the fourth SIAM, Congrès International d'Architecture Moderne, in Athens in 1933. And here you have the this pledge, let's say, with the names of the Greek party. all these modernists worked quite successfully for the cultural elite and the state programs of urban infrastructure, but failed to set some solid foundations for a modernized practice of architecture. The unsettled issues of the time, antiquated building industry and professional rights distribution, flexible ethics, tolerance of illegal construction, lack of a planning culture still remain unsettled. World War II and the subsequent ferocious civil war caused enormous human and material loss and crushed the social and productive infrastructure, particularly of the countryside. The proposals of Konstantinos Doxiadis to put priority in the reconstruction and revitalization of the provinces were ignored, and thus a major imbalance was established between Athens and the rest of the country. The emergence of the small building company that managed construction and development without own capital, personnel and apparatus, through the system of antiparochy, which means acquiring the right to develop a site in exchange for developed property in the projected building, and the development of a very aggressive contractors' culture that discouraged any search for quality and innovation beyond immediate profit, also defined the conditions of post-war reconstruction. It was against this unfavored background that Greek architecture re-emerged in the post-war years. The early 50s were marked by the dominant presence of Dimitris Pikionis, influenced by the populist intellectual thought. Pikionis was attracted by an ahistorical study of Greek and Oriental artistic patterns, which led him to a theory of global unity in art. He had already produced two small but important buildings. One is the Moraitis House at Gigifies, an essay on the vernacular, and the other is the Karamanos House in Athens, which is actually a reconstruction of a Hellenistic house as proposed by Orlandos in a book of archaeology, which is taken over by Pikionis and realized as a modern house. Pikionis also experimented with modernism, but dissatisfied, he rejected it in favor of a personal neo-vernacular idiom. It was not until the 1950s that this idiom acquired full coherence. It was demonstrated in the Potamianos House at Philothea, Athens, a highly original processed representation, not a reproduction of vernacular architecture. And I would like to stress this, that this is a representation, not a reproduction of a vernacular piece of a vernacular building. There is an artistic transformation. It's not just a copy. In 1951, Pikionis was commissioned to design the landscaping of the Acropolis surroundings, which is actually this crooked pathway which leads to this point there, which is a belvedere from which one can see the Parthenon and the Acropolis. Unperturbed by issues of function, he concentrated on the visual and experiential aspects of architecture so as to produce meaning out of an unprecedented collection of materials, objects, and forms of emblematic nature and purposefully unidentified origin, which unfold wisely over the site in an expression of timelessness. Due to this work, probably the single most important one in 20th century Greek architecture, Pikionis was later recognized as a pioneer of architectural regionalism worldwide. During the end of his career, Pikionis was commissioned to design the town hall of the city of Volos, where his idiom reaches its limits. This is a building almost out of scale, and this is his last work, and his legacy, which is debased as a neo-vernacular architecture that spreads all over Greece with varying degrees of modernity or simplification or abstraction. The 1950s in Athens, particularly, are a period of fast urban transformation. After a period of almost 15 years of without much building activity, there's actually an explosion. This is how Athens evolves from here in the late 30s to this condition in the early 70s or mid-70s. And the majority of the buildings that were being built at that time were by conservative architects like Kitsikis and his colleagues. This is a work by Plumistos, a public building, and a hotel, this kind of architecture. The late 50s and 60s were a period of unparalleled growth after a long period of depression and conservatism. In architecture, too, despite shortcomings, this also was an era of true achievement. It was then that the majority of recent public buildings of merit were produced, along with quite a few private ones of great importance. Greek architecture attracted international attention, and a few Greek architects based in Greece or abroad, like Doxiadis, Xenakis, a civil engineer and later an avant-garde music composer, Kandilis, and also Provelengios, these people acquired international reputation. Others, like Stamos Papadakis, a pioneer of modernism and member of the SIAM, and also Saporta and Despotopoulos, totally frustrated out of what was happening in Greece at the time, launched international careers. They actually emigrated. Aris Konstantinidis confined his career within Greece, but acquired without wide recognition. Reality involving limited technology, recognition of the sublime presence of the landscape and the celebration of frugal sincerity of popular lifestyle was a primary factor in his architecture. Konstantinidis also looked to the vernacular not for patterns or forms, but for principles. And in this, he was quite different to Pikionis. He gradually distilled his design building method into a coherent rational system, which could be and indeed was applied to unaltered to all building types, from workers' housing to public buildings, such as museums. This is Konstantinidis' first work in 1938. Actually, it looks quite vernacular, but at the same time, the syntactic of the building is influenced by nobody less than Schinkel. During the war, Konstantinidis is visiting the refugee settlements, which are spontaneous, and he documents the situation there by with his camera and also by sketching. You see the buildings as they existed and as Konstantinidis sketched them. Then he makes survey drawings of vernacular houses, an endeavor that occupies him for a long time afterwards. So he visits the countryside where he documents structures like this, temporary structures, which remind him of the Greek megaron, that is, the nuclear and primary form of dwelling since almost prehistoric times, which is one room with a porch in front. He's also interested in complexes, but it is not the city planner's approach, it's an architect's approach. Those little words over there are notes on the color that is being used. He's also visiting the antiquities around Athens and beyond, this comes from Vase. All vernacular settlements all around Athens and Greece. But what Constantinidis is looking for is actually in the process of being destroyed. This is a book of that period documenting the state efforts for housing those who are called urban refugees, that is, refugees who came to Greece in 1922, and till the that period, 1957, they were just being housed a whole 30 years after they had come from Asia Minor. This is the situation as it existed in the refugee settlements, which Constantinidis was visiting. And that is what Constantinidis is setting as principles or as a frame of mind for his architecture. It's the soil of Homer that your foot is stepping on, a verse of Solomos, and then something by Goethe, Rimbaud. If I have a choice, it is only for the earth and the stones, Hölderlin, Jacob Burckhardt, and Pascal. So a kind of idealistic approach to things. And then again, a set of drawings that establish his lineage. You see part of Delphi on top with many versions of the Greek Megaron, the room with the porch, the cell and the porch on top, the temple in Antis upper right, a primary Christian chapel lower left, more composite forms of the Megaron, and the simple straw structure that you saw before. Oh, what is this? At the lower left. Inspired by this light structure, he's designing this pavilion for handicraft, which was of an organization which was under the patronage of the queen. And it should be said that both Pikionis and Constantinidis have connections to the court, which is interesting because they both express different kinds of modernity, if Pikionis is a kind of modernist. But the other brand of modernism that we will follow later has no connection to this center of power. Constantinidis is designing houses like workers' houses like this in Heraklion in Crete. You see at the beginning it's brightly colored and quite pleasant architecture, repetitive and orderly, with the use of color, just as he had noticed the colors in the sketch that I mentioned before, with the small words mentioning the exact colors and their locations on the buildings. Another kind of workers' housing in the vicinity of Athens. As I mentioned before, he gradually distilled his design and building method into a coherent rational system, which could and indeed was applied and altered to all building types. Here you have his typology of hotel room wings that are being combined so as to produce all this variety of Xenia hotels around Greece. Constantinidis was the director of planning for the Xenia hotels and left indeed a great legacy there. The same notion of standardization. It is interesting to see that he is talking about standardization in construction. If one reads this, one might assume that this is a kind of industrialized process of construction, which it is not. Actually, all the dark, the black elements are solid masonry walls, very heavy, built on site by craftsmen. So this allusion to an industrialized building method is totally out of place. Konstantinidis is proceeding with manual work. Again, the same process. You see from the simple bungalow on the lower right to more complicated buildings, all of them houses. Now, this is the celebrated small house in Anavissos. Konstantinidis was building on all the most exquisite sites that were available to him at that time. The same house from closer, the other side with the porch, and this is the plan. You see how the car comes. There is a little parking space, one room, one living room and dining room, and further to the right, a kitchen with a small porch, a bedroom and a bathroom, plus all this long porch to the south. Another version of the same model. Please note that Konstantinidis' model of this house stands on top of this masonry wall. You see? This is an image by Konstantinidis himself, as most of the others before. Thank you, Mrs. Fessa, for providing me with this. Again, this the same building, the plan, with a grand piano in the one-room house. Giannis Morali's studio on the island of Aegina. The notion of transparency in between these heavy walls. Konstantinidis' own house on the island of Spetses, whitewashed. The other side. The Ambassador Xidis' house in Athens. The plans. A detail. The version of the system, of the building system of Konstantinidis, as presented in his one-man exhibition in the National Gallery of Athens in the early 80s, and the real application in a pavilion for the Greek National Tourism Organization, of which Konstantinidis has also been the director of architectural projects. I'm showing this just to for you to see the way that Konstantinidis manages to handle light. One of the hotels he designed for the Greek National Tourist Organization, the Xenia Hotel in Kalambaka, section and plans. Another set of guest houses in Epidavros within the antique site. A view, another view. The Hotel Xenia on the island of Mykonos. The entrance, the guest room wings. The Xenia Motel in Chalkidiki, in Paliouri. And the Xenia in Poros, with this spectacular section on this little drawing, with a with a terrace with shades. As I mentioned before, the same system is applicable to all kinds of buildings. Here is the Archaeological Museum of Ioannina, where you can see the clarity of the structure, somehow influenced by the almost haphazard location of the little refugee houses, however rationalized and put into order. The entrance of the museum. Details. You see how he with the variety of the height, he put some hierarchy into the design. Another detail. Another version of the same reality, less critical than the one of Konstantinidis, but thoroughly progressive and optimistic, inspired the generation of architects that emerged in the 50s. It can be said that a cross-section of its orientations and achievements at their best lies in the work of Alsamakis. The first building by Alsamakis is the Semitelou Street apartment house, in which he subverted the commercial clichés of the time straight away. He was still a student. This has been designed in 1951. The typical pierced outer wall has receded behind an abstract gridded plane that defines, I mean, the gridded plane on the lowest side and the outer wall, these two lines define a continuous loggia. The plan is cleaned from any redundant complexities or concessions to pretentious formality. This kind of architecture gets rid of all the small auxiliary spaces and these transitional spaces that were characteristic of the bourgeois or aspiring bourgeois apartment houses of the same era, and corresponds to a kind of sincere and straightforward way of life. Materials, colors, and textures selected so as to enhance the building's articulation within the frame of a reserved plasticity replaced the established uniformity of off-white plaster. Actually, as you see here, Valsamakis has articulated the base and the shaft of the building. At the base, there is a heavy masonry wall that is revealed as non-bearing by the exposure of the freestanding round columns. So in this way, Valsamakis alludes to a kind of timeless construction made of stone, but at the same time, he shows clearly that he is a modern architect using a reinforced concrete frame for his building. And from the first floor on, the bearing structure is integrated into the outer wall, and the loggia that I mentioned before is projecting outside this wall. This is the loggia. After testing and expanding this vocabulary of sensuous warmth in a series of paradigmatic apartment houses, Valsamakis focused on a search for special experience, which was fully achieved in his outstanding essays in total design, which are The Houses in Anavisos. I'm going to go back and forth a little bit. This is house one in Anavisos on this cliff. The interior, another view. This is house two, the bearing structure consisting of two concrete slabs and metal pillars, columns, framing the view around. Actually, the little house by Konstantinidis that I showed you before is here. So you can understand the difference of architectural and conception of space between the two architects. The final product, the interior, and the architect's own house. Maybe we should remark that this was the outcome of an experiment that Valsamakis has the chance to undertake. In 1960, He was commissioned to design a pavilion for the National Bank of Greece at the Thessaloniki International Trade Fair. What Valsamakis actually did was a copy of the structure conceived by Miss van der Rohe here in America, a concise version of the IIT campus building and so on. This experience, this experiment actually, allowed him to perceive this new kind of space that we saw in the Anavisos villas. It is obvious that there is a difference between these buildings. This is the metal structure before the finishes. This is the finished work. And here are the plans of the Villa 1. What is important to see is that this pavilion that makes the... this freestanding thing that the pavilion consists of is repeated here. So you see that there is this big square, which is the cover, and then underneath you have the dining room and the living room, very spacious, very open to all directions, and then there is a different wing to the left, a little submerged by 1 meter point two, I think, so that the initial square thing, this elementary building, remains very clear to everybody who sees it from outside, and also allows, if you see those windows to the left, if you stand in this room, you can see on one hand the sea and the view of the sea, of the Aegean, and on the other side, you can see the view of the mountains slightly upwards. So you feel totally... You have a 360 degrees view all the way around. Large terraces. Almost the same situation in this house. And finally, this plan for the architect's own house, which was not designed for the site, but it was exactly the opposite, which means that the architect had a specific design in his mind, and he tried to find the appropriate site. This makes out of Valsamakis almost a classicist. Why I'm saying this? Because proceeding from a fixed design to the site and not vice versa actually is a typological approach to architecture. You have a fixed idea in your mind, a fixed arrangement of spaces, a fixed plot of movement and enclosure, and then you have the wrapping of the whole space, and then you have to put this unit in a site. Again, the view of the frame and the finished house with the pool. All the internal partitions are light, sandwich construction. The interior of the house. The Le Corbusier-looking fauteuils are actually copies made by Valsamakis. So you have a piece of architecture that looks towards the purism of Mies, but with a very with a lot harder texture or richer texture. Another house in the vicinity of Patras of 1965. And then, beyond the 60s, the architecture of Valsamakis continues to evolve, a process of elimination of projections and of variety of materials and textures leads to a highly original minimalistic idiom that is applied to residences in Philothea This is one, the interior. Another residence in Philothea, where Valsamakis experiments with a pitched roof, something required by the client and until then unheard for a modernist. And then a third house in Kifisia for an art collector who required this space in the middle for the exhibition of the collection. The house in Kifisia. And then the Amalia Hotel in Olympia of 1977. Actually, the 70s and 80s are marked by the realization of the Credit Bank headquarters in Athens and by a constant experimentation on behalf of Valsamakis, which includes this essay in Contextualism, the reference to a vernacular house in Attica with an atrium, which might be also an antique model transposed in a contemporary suburb in Athens. The same building, another view. Then again a purist house, a purist vacation house in Sunio, where Valsamakis exposes the transition from the enclosed space to the covered space to the open space. As you see, you have the covered and enclosed living room to the right, which, when the sliding doors are retracted, is transformed into a shed. And then on the left, you have a pergola. And then further, deeper, you have a kind of atrium since this part is uncovered. So you have the full transition from enclosed space to open space. The view from inside. The Amalia Hotel in Nafplion, again an essay in Contextualism. Nafplion is a neoclassical city, and Valsamakis chooses to experiment with this. And this is the section of the Credit Bank in Athens, a consciously urban building, quite distanced from what might be the standard for a modernist, in the sense that Valsamakis employs rhetorical devices so as to adjust or integrate his building into the context, with all those double-height windows and so on. However, the interior is totally modern, without the slightest reminiscence of classicism, while the vaults are, you know, high-tech and shiny steel. A private gallery close to Athens, again an essay in three-dimensional space, after the initial experimentation within the two slabs, the two large slabs. The same principles apply to the scale of the settlement for a resort on the island of Kos. A house in Pikermi, a different option, version of the atrium house. A house on Paros. A house on Vouliagmeni, a hotel resort. And finally, a recent house by Valsamakis, again, Valsamakis revisiting the notion of the shed on this very privileged site. Again, the option of fully retracting the glass doors and fusing interior and exterior. in a room that from 10 by 10 becomes 20 by 20 meters. At that time, among the key figures of this distinguished generation, one should also mention Zenetos for his technological refinement, innovative formal strategies, typological research, and anticipation of a totally controlled environment. Villa in Cavui, Villa in Psychico, Villa in Glyphada. Also, the public sector is producing some good architecture. The vegetable and fruit market in Athens, to the use of it. The Piraeus passenger terminal by Lapis and Skourbelos. A tour de force in construction, in structure. A house by Konstantinos de Kavalas in Kavouri. An exhibition pavilion in Thessaloniki by Fatouros, also a very interesting building. A villa by Vitellas. This quite interesting office building on Syntagma Square, where Vitellas is transcribing the model of the apartment house with the balconies into an office building with all those hanging gardens, let's say. Vitellas pioneered tall buildings in Athens, and at the same time was building some quite fancy one-family houses, like this one, in the early 60s. Iason Rizos, who built this amazing pavilion travel stop in Nekali, now demolished. This brutalist complex in the University of Thessaloniki by Papayoannou and Finesse. These belong to another generation that established itself very quickly due to the architectural competitions of the 60s. Leonardos and Kalivitis, the School of Theology in Athens. Gartsos, also Gartsos in Loutraki. And then we reach another chapter, which is that of Dimitris and Susanna Antonakaki. They made a truly radical contribution. Despite established values and expressive means, they introduced a strong critical attitude as primary element of their discourse. Pikionis and Konstantinidis can be considered their predecessors, although both of them established their criticism on the premises of tradition. Dimitris and Susanna Antonakaki seem to equally derive their critical apparatus from such disparate sources as Mies van der Rohe's modular ordering, Le Corbusier's irregular forms and brutalism, and the Dutch structuralist mode of organization, which they integrate into a highly original idiom. They quickly proceed from this house in Haidari, very plain and straightforward in a Miesian idiom, to this house in Glyphada, where their zoning approach to the plan is already visible, and also the same approach on the elevation section with double-story rooms, till the museum in Chios, where all that I said before about the modular ordering and so on can be seen. Very clearly structured. The housing settlement in Distomo, half unfinished, half finished. It's interesting to see that the kind of functional and structurally significant zoning that underlies the design of Dimitris and Susanna Antonakaki and the use of irregular modular grids in plan and section allows for an unprecedented variety and power in the interiors of their works, visible in the houses at Spata, this one. These are the roofs. In Vula and in Akrotiri, quite a large house. The very famous apartment house in on Benaki Street in Athens, where they work with double orientation and ventilation and so on. And also the vacation houses in Oxylithos, where this ordering is again quite visible, particularly through this drawing. And the same concept is applied to much larger structures, like the Litos Hotel concept complex. This is an axonometric of the public areas of the hotel, a detail. initially intentionally plain, textured and materially poor, like this house in Oxylithos and this house in Phaleron, the Andonakakis gradually accommodate intended contradiction, acquired richness, and the density of elaboration that endows each of their projects with a particular intimacy. A house under the Acropolis, the interior, another house, and a bank branch in Rhodes, another house in Kifisia, where you can see the complexity I'm referring to in plan, and the complexity of the interior. This concept includes a kind of dialectics of private and public. The same dialectics are perpetuated within and beyond the building to various scales, and they further enhance special qualities. The solidity of the canvas on which they work allows for an expansion of this concept to the scale of the of a settlement, of a large concept, like a campus, a university campus, as in this case, and this case, in Rethymno and Chania on the island of Crete. Chania, Mr. Tounitiotis, visible here. Again, to the left, to the right. And there is a further degree of elaboration at that level of the paving, a house in Athens with modulation of light. Again, the paving. Along a similar, thoroughly radical approach, however, without the slightest regionalist influences, the work of Kalogeras, Koulermos, and Amourgis addressed crucial issues and unexpected times long before they became shared discourse among architects. This is a competition project, and this is a Tobeiko factory in Piraeus. So Tombazis approaches the work of the architect as an engineer in the manner of problem solving, not expression, not cultural commentary. Influenced by the metabolist movement in Japan, he produces work of precision unknown till that time in Greece. The school in Nea Smyrna, the headquarters of a cement company in Athens, with this symbolic statue in the atrium, a bank office building, with a particular elaboration of the ground floor, a school based not on the established model of the 30s, but on a different model coming from America, actually. The same school, the Athens College. His own house. Tombazis, in the 70s, becomes interested in energy design, in what was called at that time solar design. This house, at Trapeza, a pioneering work at the international level, launches him as a world expert in this area. He has the opportunity to design an entire solar settlement in the vicinity of Athens, and gradually takes a more integrated approach, which is actually what we call today bioclimatic design. And one specimen is this, the ABB offices, Recently, he has finished a huge church in Portugal after an international competition in Fatima. You can judge by the size of the square. The interior. A project by Yannis Koukis and Altsidzoglou. A very peculiar architecture by Greek standards, unappreciated. The interior of a house with a Greek version of the round plan by Laws. Well, I will skip it since the real people are here. But I would like to say how much this little building affected my generation when I was a student. Very plain, very few means, a series of houses, an office building, a courthouse, a school, the Arsakios school in Patras, and then Tasos and Dimitris Biris. Since their early age, since they were assistants to the office of their father, Professor Biris, they already had a very good set of works, the courthouse in Livadia, the Konitsa dormitory, the school in Nea Smyrni, the Zea recreation complex, and then came a series of three houses, one in Ekali, the same unit multiplied becomes, from a one-family house, it becomes an apartment house in Polydroso, and then a small complex for a suburb in Politia. Their interest gradually shifts into the public realm, and they elaborate the concept of the central public nucleus in a building, or the large public gesture, as in this case, where they propose a coloring, a new painting for the furnaces of steelworks in Athens, visible from far away. Again, a version of public space. And then comes this swimming pool complex, a competition for the Olympic swimming pool. Actually, the greatest part of the work of the Biris brothers remained unbuilt in lamentable proof of the public sector's lack of interest in architecture. They have been winning one competition after the other, and only recently, after 20 years or so, have the project started being executed. An administrative building in Livadia, an excavated congress center in Olympia, their proposal for the new Acropolis Museum, not the last competition, the one of the late 80s, a huge shed. Actually, they are alluding to some myths that persist in Greek architecture. I remind you of the sheds that Konstantinidis was sketching. So we have a monumentalization of this concept, extending over a huge surface so as to house all the antiquities and the landscape. Actually, there is no artificial floor. It's just plain rock, and the antiquities are supposed to be exhibited on the rock. Another administrative building with some expressive details, an office building for Ethniki Asphalistiki, actually executed by Botta, a chapel for the University of Thrace, a town hall for Agia Paraskevi in Athens, a cultural center in Thessaloniki, the Chapel of Thrace again, an executed building in Athens, detail of the facade. Actually, their work is limited to the facade and not to the entire building. an apartment house in Athens. And then we come to Krokos. Krokos worked as an assistant to Lyapis initially. He was also a disciple of the painter Tsaroukis and an accomplished painter himself. He started with a purist idiom. Actually, although he's promoted as a modernist, Krokos is not a modernist. He recalls and goes back to the memories of his youth at the time of Reconstruction in the 40s and 50s, where most of the buildings were left unplastered, and so he could see the concrete frame and the brick infill. So this is what he reproduces in his work, however, meticulously crafted to the point of excellence. The interior of a house in Philothea, with hammered concrete. You see the detail here, all exposed and perfectly executed. You see the texture that he employs and his handling of the light in the basement. By all means, reflections on the bricks, colored glasses, direct sunlight, and so on. Glass bricks, transparent glass panes, milky glass. Here is the Krokos proposal for the same site with Biris for the Acropolis competition. You see that instead of the unitary gesture of Biris, Krokos is proceeding with an additive process. Many elementary atrium houses are gathered so as to have the museum as a result of additions. No roof, so as to see the interior arrangements. What I said before of about Krokos as an accomplished painter, another view of the model of the Acropolis Museum, a perspective of his Byzantine Culture Museum in Thessaloniki, a competition won by Krokos in 1977. The museum was finished in 1993, one of the few instances that public competitions get executed. A view of the Museum of Byzantine Culture in Thessaloniki. Another detail, again, this handling of the materials so as to produce effects through reflection of light and the enhancement of textures. You see concrete, brick, wood, stucco, terrazzo floors, marble bands, and so on. A detail from a private museum of painter Fasianos, the transformation of a pre-existing apartment building in Athens. Again, the play with texture and light. A detail of the Byzantine Museum. A house in Aegina. Detail from Aegina. You see again the handling of light from this skylight on the top. On the roof. This approach of the semi-finished building as an integrated building. Here you only have the frame, but the architecture is already there. This is a furniture exhibition in Kifisia, left unfinished. A house in Chalkidiki. Model of the house, the plan. The plans of Krokos are rather unclear since he proceeds in an additive way. The Fasianos Museum, the textures and the colors, details, stone and ironwork details. Now I could proceed with many slides from the generation of architects that are around 50. I will only show you three of them, three slides. One, this one is the Mechaniki Construction Company by Andreas Kourkoulas and Maria Kokinou with Yannis Peponis in Marousi, a building with urban aspirations. Then the Amphiadjoglou Private Museum and Residence by Katerina Diakomidou, Nikos Haritos and Christos Papoulias. And finally, the house by Pantelis Nikolakopoulos, who is constantly working within the Konstantinidis idiom. Well, just for your information, the well-known Tchoumi Museum, the reflections of the Parthenon on the external glass walls, the excavations and the device that Tchoumi proposed for the entrance. The entrance is one level up, the eastern part of the museum. Actually, I like to think that the fluting of the columns of the Parthenon is being repeated in here. Now, I could proceed with several other architects in the age of 40 or something, but I will limit myself in what I perceive as a different kind of architecture that did not exist in the previous generations. So I will show you three examples of architects that work in another, within another, a different frame of mind. This one is Aristides Antonas, who is working in a conceptual way. He elaborates the primary functions of housing, of dwelling, which are sleeping and hygiene and things like that. And he produces those strange buildings, buildings for isolation and reflection, that merge with the soil, and they are ruins from the very beginning of their existence. They may be houses, but they are uncovered. The bathtub and the pool are next to each other. They can be, they can constitute settlements. This is an axonometric source to understand what it is about. All the rooms are 2.5 meters wide. And then he also proceeds with what could be called a ready-made. He finds this construction somewhere in Greece, surveys it very meticulously with the use of a computer, and proposes again those elementary situations of dwelling. You see there is just a bed and a table plus a computer in this age of informatics. And what actually exists, the dwelling space, is in the basement, is underneath what you saw before. Here it is. And this secret place is a place of study and meditation again, underneath the crude construction that we see here and there all over Greece. And the third project, on the island of Hydra, where the limitations of building are very severe, Antonas maintains the limitations that are imposed by regulations, the proportion of solid and void, the form of the openings, the doors, the windows, everything. But the interior is quite different. He calls it the amphitheater house. And again, it is a study on dwelling. But at this point, the public part of the dwelling, that is the living room, is seen as the most public part possible, the theater. And the residents themselves are actors and spectators at the same time. Antonas is also reflecting on architectural representation. Nowadays, that conventional means of representation are over, and that we can do practically everything with computer. He is proposing a new way of representation of an exposed presentation. He takes images of the executed building and makes collages through computer. So what we see is actually a photographic survey of the real situation. The section with the amphitheater and the auxiliary spaces on the side, and the roof and so on, plus what he calls an internal bird's eye view. Again, this play with concepts and representation means and design and what is a project and what is survey and so on. And an internal view of the house. Another proposal, and the Antonas project, this project and the next one are also comments on the discussion that we had yesterday about recent trends in Greek architecture. This one is by Andreas Angelidakis. Angelidakis is a computer freak, actually, and he works on the internet continuously and lives a second life in Second Life. So all his architecture revolves around this concept of digitized life and digitized perception. This is a real project for an exhibition space for video art. The reception desk, digitally manufactured. And then Angelidakis reflects on the possibility of non-planar architecture, an architecture for vacation in the form of waves close to the sea. And these waves become blue, and they also get realized in the form of a model, of course. And again, there is this game, mind game, about scale in architecture, because the entire architecture of Angelidakis is scaleless, since it is in the digital world. He proposes houses like this, which he calls the cloud house. Obviously a critique of whatever we consider a reasonable dwelling. And I would like you to consider at the same time the Antonas proposal and the Angelidakis proposal, a proposal for the location of the cloud house on the beach next to the fumes there, another version, again this problem of scale within the same project, which is the correct scale of the house, and then another option for a competition in Athens. This is the outcome, a castle, maybe, with roof terraces and so on. Another version for an apartment building in Athens. And real Second Life. He's designing houses for Second Life, for real clients. Well, real, anyway. Where he also integrates his other projects. Again, one should note the fact that there is no scale in all this. I mean, the size of architecture could be that big, or whatever. So one of the fundamental elements of architecture, which is scale, is gone. Is it architecture? I don't know. And finally, with this, within this world of digitized perception and action, the group Minima Forms of Stephen and Theodore Spiropoulos who work on form mating through digital means. This is a city structure. This is a gate for Brunel University. After this element there, which is the product of a modeling exercise. A vehicle for a veteran, a war veteran, designed in collaboration with a man from Poland, with wings. There was a discussion about Daedalus yesterday. And then the expansion of architecture beyond the perception of real space into the realm of creation of hallucinations through light and smoke and things like that in Bristol. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.